sort of into it.
Yosef had some problems with his brothers. And he had his dream, and he went to the brothers and told them the dream. I don't have time to get into it, but it says that they hated him for the dream. They saw that the father loved him more than any others. So they hated him. They could not talk anything good, peaceful to him, because they hated. Yosef chalom. He had a dream. Vayegeid lechav. And he told the brothers, "Vayosifu od sinoto." So they added to their hatred of him. What did he tell them? He had a dream. He told his brothers, so they had more hatred for him now. What did he tell them?
That he'd be charged.
He told them the dream. Unfortunately, that's not the case, because pasuk vav is, sorry, it was a setup. But Yomer Alam, and he said to them, "Shimuna." No means please, please listen to the dream, please. He didn't even tell the dream yet. Why do they hate him more now? He didn't tell him the dream. All he said was, "I had a dream." Now we really hate you. Maybe it was about a rocket ship landed on the moon. Why'd they hate him more? Because he said he just had a dream. They didn't even hear the dream yet. That's what we don't have time for. Sorry. But it's a good introduction to what we do have time for. Vihine, and he's, please listen to my dream. Vihine, anachnu ma'almim alumim betoch hasadah. And every time you come to the word vihine, it's a chiddush, something new. Something new you weren't expecting. Vihine, behold. And behold doesn't have the same, same thing, same meaning. Hine in Hebrew, it's a chiddush. Vihine! Anachnu ma'almim alumim b'toch hasadeh. We're gathering there, our sheaves, we're gathering in the field. V'hine! He likes a lot of v'hines over here. V'hine! Kama alumati! My sheave got up. V'gam nitzava. And it stood firm. V'hine! Tisubena alumoteichem. And your sheaves gathered around. V'tishtachavena alumati. And they bowed to mine. Vayomru lo achav, and his brother said to him, Hamaloch timloch aleinu, imashol timshol bano. Are you going to rule over us? Are you going to rule over us and we don't repeat ourselves? What's with the double lasha? Why do they have Hamaloch tim? We know how to say the word rule over us in two different ways, Melech and Moshel. Hamaloch timloch aleinu, imashol timshol bano. Look at that. Impressed now? Why are they repeating themselves? Same exact question. But you see, so now they hated him even more. So now you see, he didn't tell them the dream, because he just told them he dreamed. They hated him more. Once he told them the dream, even more. But see, and he had another dream. And he told the brothers. And he said, Hine, chalamti chalom od. Behold, I dreamed another dream. V'nei Hashemesh v'yareach, the sun and the moon, v'achar asar kochavim, mishtachavim li, are bowing down to me. Kasha. Why is it that the second dream cuts right to the chase, unlike the first dream? The first dream, we see we were all in the field, hanging out, being a bunch of sheaves of wheat. And then all our sheaves got around together. You surrounded my sheaves. Oh, wait. First mine stood up. And then you gathered around to come and see how mine stood up. And then you bowed to mine. Second dream goes right to 11 stars, sun and moon, bow to me. What am I? I'm not a sun. I'm not a moon. I'm not a star as well. Just there I was. In the celestial bodies, me, Yosef, I, Yosef, when I was standing there, and all of a sudden, all of you Just bow to me. But you were represented as the sun and moon. What about like, come on, we were all hanging out in the sky, and then, that whole piece doesn't exist. And it starts off, vihine, and what's the point of the second dream? That the first dream wasn't good enough? We needed a second dream? What's pshat over here? And I'd like to suggest the following interpretation. It is my own homiletics. That's a fancy word. I don't know what it means, but I know how to use it. Vihine is a sefer called Micha. Micha is one of our Treyasar. I'm hoping that all of us know Treyasar, at least the names of the books. If you're clueless, so there's a good mnemonic. Haya, Am Nachatz Chazam. Works. Haya, Hoshea Yoel Amos, Aim, Ovadia Yona Micha, Nachatz, Nachum Chavakuk Tzipanya, Chazam Chagai Zachari Malachi. So Micha is one of the Treyasar. We call them minor prophets. They happen to be major as far as we are concerned because they are the ones that left us with the messages for after Churban Bayis Sheni. That's us. So it's pretty important to learn Treyasar. And in Micha, Perek Dalid, there's a nevuah there. It says, V'yata Migdal Eder, Ophel Batzion, and to you, the tower of Eder of the flock. Ophel Batzion, the eye of the daughter of Zion. Adecha Teate, to you they will come. Memshala Rishona, Yerushalayim. I'm sorry, Memshala Rishona, Mamlechet Yerushalayim. First rulership, kingdom of Jerusalem. Comes the Malbim, Rabbo Sayan tells us. These are three different stages of Geula. The first stage, Adecha Teate, to you they will come. That's one stage in the Galus of the bringing of Geula. Kibbutz Galiot. Two, Memshala Rishona. First there's going to be a Memshala. You know what a Memshala is? A Moshel, Moshlim, rulers. A bunch of rulers. But not the malucha, the kingdom. The kingship, that's the last stage. The Malbim writes from the 1700s, first it's going to start with a memshala, just people like cops and rabs, they have rules, but they're not the malucha. And we'll see in a minute what that means. And from them will emanate the malucha. And that's the pasuk, a nevuah from Sefer Micha. It goes like this. The Jewish people are a microcosmic model for the macrocosmic world. In English, the Jewish people are a model. Whatever we do between us, between brother and brother, Jew and Jew, that is what's going to happen between Jew and non-Jew. If you want to know how the whole world runs and who affects whom, the entire inner world, in-house world of the Jewish people affects the entire world. So if you want to know what's going to bring on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's animosity or punishment to the Jewish people, it's very simple. If the Jews aren't good to God, then non-Jews will all of a sudden hate the Jews. If the Jews aren't good to each other, God will send an enemy against the Jewish people. I'll show you. You have two people in hospital beds next to each other. They're best friends. They will learn to like each other. Walk out of the hospital, the sign of success very often is that now we can leave and walk out and we don't have to care about each other anymore. We're healthy. I'm healthy. I don't have to look at you anymore. That's a saddened sign, depressing sign of success when everyone diversifies and no longer cares about one another. In which case the hospital scene, I don't want to say, definitely did, but possibly went for naught. Then why did I put you there in the first place? You didn't learn the whole point. What's going on between the brothers, Rabosai? You see, every letter in Torah is important. We weren't just hanging out in a field. In the field. And the Medrash tells us, where is the field? The same idea as the field that Avraham Avinu bought land. In the field. There's a famous concept that how do you know that women are purchased when it comes to marriage, that the acquisition can happen with money? So the Gemara says, because, you know, Avram bought land, and there's kicha, kicha, mistei Avram. The word kicha appears here, the word kicha appears there. Rav Kook said, oh my, what are we talking about? We're talking about buying a woman the way you buy a piece of property? What's going on here? You don't buy a what? You're married. You're talking about marriage. And Rav Kook said in one of his Shal Shodas drushes, no. We're talking about hasadeh, the field. Avram didn't just buy the land of Israel either. He married it. We're married to Eretz Yisrael. We don't just buy Eretz Yisrael. You're married to Eretz Yisrael. We were standing there as sheaves of wheat in the field in Eretz Yisrael. There was Kibbutz Galiot, and all the brethren started to come back. Behold, my sheave got up. Yosef stands up amongst the Kibbutz Galios. Keep in mind, it's a model for the whole world. The Jewish people. You have all the different people. Christians are now here, and Muslims are here, and everybody wants to have a piece of Israel. Vinei kama lumasi, the Jewish people are going to stand up. The gam nitzav, and it's going to stand firm. It's not going to blow over. It's not going to go anywhere. Nitzav, it's a matseva, it's a monument. We're not budging. And then there will be the third stage where all the other nations will gather around my sheaf representing Am Yisrael. You're going to bow to my Aluma. In the inner world, it means Yosef is going to get up from amongst the Jews. In the outer world, it means the Jews from within the rest of the world. There's only one problem. Hamaloch timloch aleinu. Im mashal timshal banu. Throughout Tanakh, you can use the word im as a second question. If it's the second phrase, you can start a question with im. But I have a drasha on this. That may be, being that the word im also means if, so it comes out like this. They were telling Yosef, you know what? Maybe we'll grant your dream some truth. Maybe we'll even believe it with some validity. Hamaloch timloch aleinu. Im mashal timshal banu. Just because you're going to be the Moshel. Im mashal timshal banu. Just because you're going to be the Moshel. Hamaloch, so that means you're going to be the king? The melech, we know, that's agreed upon by God. We know the king is agreed upon in heaven. So that, I don't know. Who said you're going to be the real melech? Maybe it'll be just the memshalah, which we'll knock out as soon as we can, and then we'll really put in the real rulers. So that's why Yosef has a second dream. Jumps right in. I just had one additional point to make. The hinei, the shemesh yireach, in the heavenly bodies, they're also going to concur and agree that I'm supposed to be the ruler. I'm also going to be melech. And come the nations of the world and say, maybe you Jews, maybe you think you'll like play cops and robbers for 50, 60 years, but then we'll throw you out and we'll show you who the real leader is. No. Once it's Nitzava, it stands firm. You're going to go around, you're going to bow to ours, and then it's even going to be agreed upon as the latest stage by the Melech Olam out in Shemayim. And that's the difference between the first dream, which is sheaves of wheat down here, nourishment of the world, and the second dream, which is the heavenly spheres. And that is my interpretation of the dreams. And with this, I'd like to use it as a springboard to discuss a very, very sensitive subject, and that is the one of moving to Eretz Yisrael. And I have to preempt it with one point, and that is, I am not a fan. Can't say I'm not a fan. That's incorrect. I do not push anyone staying in Eretz Yisrael after their year or years in yeshiva. It's very, very different to be in real life when you don't have your parents, you don't have your home, you don't have your bedroom, you don't have your relatives, you don't have your money. Everything is different. When you're in yeshiva, you cannot relate to it. You have people, you have a home, you have places where to go, you feel comfortable. The second you're out on your own, it's a different world entirely, and you got to really, really know what you're doing and what you're in for. However, that certainly shouldn't take away from all those that have chosen to stay. Draw tremendous nachas from them. But I'd like to start with the following story, that when I got married, I came home one day, and there were two piles of clothes on my bed. Like, what's going on here? My wife explained to me, I went through the closet, and I sifted through, and I got rid of some of your clothes. We're married a week now. You did what? If I'm not mistaken, I think you told me you sifted through my clothes. She said, look at these pants. They've got to go. This shirt is see-through. You can't wear that. You don't touch my shirt. Oh, no, you don't. You don't even know the background of that shirt. That shirt she was holding was the first shirt I bought as a person that went out shopping on my own. Now, I understand it was 10 years later now, but it was one of those greatest feelings ever. It was on sale rack. And then I also had a coupon. And then I filled out for a Visa and got 20% off. I paid $2.17 for that shirt. You know, that is the most beautiful shirt in the world. You can't touch that shirt. And of course I had to fight her about it. But when she left the room, I took another look at the shirt. I do have to admit, I never looked before. It is kind of see-through. It's been worn out a little. Guess it's not such a Bakovedic shirt. We have a very hard time giving up our prior notions. Anything that was a preconceived idea and concept is very, very difficult for us to part from. I have to explain. I did not jump to my move to Eretz Yisrael because I despise America. I actually kind of like the Tropicana oranges. I really like the tennis courts around the corner from my house. I liked the ski mountain 20 minutes from my house. There were a lot of good things there. And it's funny. Things there are like large. Everything here is like Mr. Magoo-like. You know, like the cucumbers are so cute. They're little. It's for play. Yeah, everything is, the coins are like for, like, is that real? No. You gotta be kidding. Like, you get Nani comes over and like, yeah, 10 shekel piece. You think it's a quarter, you just gave him $2.50. It was like unbelievable. Everything, I had this idea. If I moved to Israel, the smallest I'd accept with my house would be like rooms this size. Of course it's much smaller. Because everything just comes small. Yeah, the cars are nice and little. Everything is little. The roads, it's unbelievable. So I was determined there's absolutely no way I'm going to come here. No way. My sister came home from Israel. So do you want to make Aliyah? Absolutely not. I was in ninth grade. I'm not making Aliyah. If you want to go, because I'm to hate, do what you like with your life. She's like, well, aren't you worried about your kids? Kids? I'm in ninth grade. Not planning anytime soon. Give me some years. So that was the first time the concept was in my mind, like people make Aliyah. I never even heard of such a concept. Like, why would anyone do that? It was a great place, and I visited from the time I was 7 years old almost every summer. So I love this land. But the concept of moving here, I don't know, that was the furthest thing from my mind. And a few things developed and evolved. I'd like to share them with you. You see, Eretz Yisrael is not just a nice cute place with cute cucumbers, and you know, it's nice to visit, nice to get inspiration and learning in Torah. This happens to be the home of the Jewish people. I was at a family for Shabbos lunch, and the parents were talking about the Parsha, and she raises her voice and says, "You know, Dad, it says in the Parsha, Parshas Veschanan, that you're supposed to go to Israel and dwell there. What do you think?" It's like, come on, that's not what the pasuk means. You can't just take psukim out of context and read what you like and translate them literally. I was like, yeah, what do you think it means? Oh, I mean, like, it is a pasuk. What? There happens to be a concept that the Jewish people are supposed to live here. So what is it supposed to mean? It happens to be a special land, a unique place in the world for every single person. And the Maharal points out that if a person, a people, are displaced in a land that is not their own, it will not go well for them, or they will entirely acclimate and lose their identity of where they are. Those are the two choices. You either lose your personal identity, or you're going to have problems, because you're not meant to be there. I want to tell you what that means. A few examples. Because there was a story that forever will be in my mind. You should just know that we were born actually under different in different generations. First and foremost is because every generation, when I was younger, I was told that a generation is about every 20 years. But with the rate of advancement of technology and perversion of the world, so now an average generation is about a year, maybe two. I see it. It's remarkable. Like, we thought we were, 10 years ago we saw ADD cases. Welcome to, like, year 2007. You know, it's like a whole day. You don't even know what ADD it was, you know. And so many more things. There was a bill of the Constitution in Congress. They dealt with one of the heaviest problems. They wrote a list of the five heaviest problems facing American education. This was in the 60s. You know what the heaviest problems in the 60s in education was in America? Chewing gum in class. Calling out without being called on, cutting the line at dismissal. You know, I don't even remember the other two. What were some of the five biggest problems with the same age group in elementary school facing American education today? Drugs, alcohol, suicide, premarital sex, and I don't remember the last one, but it was of the same genre. In Congress. I'm pretty sure that included 7th and 8th grade. I don't know though. And so, when I was born under a tkufa where there were still many countries in the world that gave problems to the Jewish people. There was something in my day called the USSR. Soviet Russia. And I'm going to tell you a story about Russia. It's funny, that name. That name is just a funny name. Russia. It's just a funny name. So, God had something in store, you know, when he was thinking of that name. So, turns out there's a KGB, and the KGB made sure that, you know, you wouldn't do anything. Anything that they didn't want you doing, including religion. So, for example, when Rabbi Yudin went to visit Russia, so he had this calculator made for him before his trip that if you put in a certain code without the alphabet on it, it was a calculator, just numbers, and he memorized the, you know, everyone could figure it out, but if you put in a certain code in the numbers, then you enter an address book. And he snuck out of the country that way with this calculator, which was really an address book, and he was able to stay in touch and send letters to these people. Otherwise, there was no way to remain in touch with these people. And unfortunately, they would search you from head to toe, go through all your clothes, when you wanted to leave the country, and they picked up a little piece of paper that he had not yet finished transferring from the writing into the address book. And he said over the story, this is one of the most hysterical stories, when he came back, this is Rabbi Yudin, he's an Adam Gadol, he's a tzaddik, and the KGB officer says, Benjamin Yudin, what is this little piece of paper? What's this? Whose address is this? Quick thinker. You know, man is here all by himself. Gotta get lonely. They let him go. So Rabbi Ari Schwat from Riverdale, he's been living now in Kochav HaShachar now for numerous years. His father was from Riverdale, and he was one of the people that was a big mover and shaker and activist and would take trips to Russia. So one year they decided they were going to bring Lulavim and Esrogim and Tefillin to Russia. The smallest Lulavim and Esrogim, all of a sudden the shiurim of the smallest you could get becomes important. And they stuffed 20 sets of Lulavim and Esrogim and 20 pairs of Tefillin into a suitcase. And everyone's walking through with their suitcases, and he says to his wife, look at this, Baruch Hashem, they're not checking anyone. Our lucky day. As they walk up, Rabbi Schwat, open up your from this address, this phone number, this is what you do. They use that for exploitation purposes to scare you, and open up your bags. Open up the bags. What are these? These fruits, palm trees, what's going on over here? Do you have an agricultural license? It's a good claim. No, I don't have an agriculture. Took it away. No one in Russia that year shook lulav and esrog. Gets up to the tefillin. What are these? Well, you see, it's the Jewish holiday season, so that's called phylacteries, in case you didn't know. Right? So we put them on. Because you put them on. Uh-huh. So what's that pair? It's like, well, that's for my left hand. Well, what's that pair? Yes, that's for my wife. And what's that pair? And that pair, and that pair, and that pair, and that pair. What's going on here? So Rabbi Shrei is a good, quick thinker also. Got to be when you go to these places. So he says, I thought you KGB people were smart. This is the holiday season for the Jewish people. It's the month that we call Tishrei. And we have a lot of holidays. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. That would be Pentecost, Tabernacles, whatever you call that thing. So we wear these phylacteries for each of these holidays. We have a different kind of pair. That's for the right hand, left hand, and for the wife, for the right hand, left hand, all the whole bit. That's 20 pairs. So they took away 10 pairs. 10 people got going in Russia that year. Yeah, you have to understand that having your own country, you see, you were born in America post-48. Post-48 was a different world in America. The entire Jewish people throughout hundreds of years, thousands of years, every nation they would go to, they would have problems. Every nation. They'd go under Muslim Spain, under Christian Spain, and the Franco-German territories, and Pale Russian settlements. Everywhere the Jew went, there were problems. The Jew gets his own land, shine. All of a sudden, every Jew can raise his head held high. Everyone is doing okay. What changed is that we have our own stance. We can stand up. We have a platform. We have a country. That is in terms of freedom. However, we don't really relate so much to freedom, physical freedom, because we had it all our lives. But I'd like to share with you a little piece then about spiritual freedom. Because the same Rabbi Ari Schwat, when he was young and he was playing basketball with the natives in Kapok Park, he met up with an Italian kid. And this Italian kid told Ari Schwat that, you know, I'm Jewish. And Ari Schwat says, what's your name? So he goes, he was an Italian kid. I don't remember his last name. We'll make it up. So Frank Tortellini, that's a good sounding. So he says, yeah, that's my name. And he says to him, Tortellini. That does not sound all that Jewish to me. There's no way. Frank? Yeah, I don't know. So many people with a name like yours, that would be Jewish. He goes, yeah, you know that thing you're wearing on your head? I can show you. I know. I'll bet you $1,000,000,000. You know the way kids start betting? So he said, that's how I remembered the story. So he goes home with this kid, Frank. And Frank is going to prove it to Ari Schwat that he's Jewish. And he walks into his house. Mom, this is my buddy Ari I met at the basketball court. And he wants to see the pictures, the album, you know, the Jew pictures. And they open up the album, and lo and behold, there's a picture. He says, yeah, that's my grandfather, my great-grandfather. That's my great-grandfather. That's him. He looked like a pious Jew. Strimal. Looked pious. Wow. It's unbelievable. Ari Schwat later learned that this great-grandfather of Frank Tortellini is none other than the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim's great-grandson is not Jewish. There is intermarriage in Eretz Yisrael, but it is not like intermarriage in America. There are problems in Eretz Yisrael. It is not like problems in America. People, I love when people write about the articles, anti-Eretz Yisrael articles. It's difficult there. The people at the bank don't care about you. And it's true, they don't. But someone asked me, I was at Cafe Rimon, some distant relatives of ours caught me and said, oh, how are you? So we started catching up. It was soon after we made Aliyah. Why do you live here? He asked me directly, why do you live here? So I said, you know what? In America, I think America is phenomenal for materialism and ease of life. And it just runs smooth. And here, the physical, it's no longer the way it was. Then I said, it's more like a desert. You know, everything comes 10 years later. The movies come 10 years later. Now it's really, everything is a little bit closer. We have the first hot sandwich kosher machine. It's unbelievable. Even though it's cold in the middle, it's like unbelievable. They claim it's hot. It says hot. It's got the bacon. It's sizzling over there. And I said, but in spirituality, I feel it's the exact opposite. I have so much difficulty davening seriously when I'm there. I have so much difficulty. You go to the Chagigas, the Simchas Beis Shreva. I remember Simchas Torah in my hometown. I really don't mean to put my hometown down. I know that this was the case in many, many places. And where I was raised was no different than probably where many of you are raised. This was the picture that I have in my mind. You have like the young kids that are not... Okay, let's say, start again. We have the teenagers that are totally not in sight. If they are in sight, they're drinking on the sidewalk, but they're not dancing with the Torah. Then you have the older people, they're not dancing. And then you have the 30, 40-year-old dads that are trying so hard to dance. Not because they actually want to dance, but because they want to get their kids to be excited about dancing. You go to a Simchas Beis Shoeva and Mei Sharim, one after the other. The kids, the adults, the 70-year-old, the 90-year-old that can barely move, he's in there. The kid, the teenager, they're all into it. Every single guy is into it. There's a school in the old city called Zilberman's. Rabbi Zilberman, Zatzal, had about 12 kids. They had about 12 kids. And they all had about 12 kids. So there are now about 1,000 Zilbermans. And so they went ahead and they opened the school, all different generations, in elementary school, high school, and kollel, and the Zilbermans are the rabbeim and the teachers, and they got the whole thing, all Zilbermans. Yeah, and that's why it's called Zilberman. You can go if you're an outsider. There are like a few non-Zilbermans that like get in there. But, you know, basically just the family. So they started an idea. Why don't we follow the curriculum that Chazal prescribed for mankind? Start with Chumash, memorize Chumash and Tanakh, all of Tanakh, at 5 to 10. At 10, start Mishnah. By the time you're 15, you will have memorized all of Tanakh and Mishnayos. And then you'll start Gemara. You'll go through all of Gemara with one pshat, no Rashi or Tosfos, just whatever the Rebbe teaches you, the one pshat. And then when you're 20, when you'll be done with all Tanakh, Mishnah, and Gemara, you know it all backwards and forwards. And I had a few kids sitting behind me in the shul in Leil Tisha B'Av, and they were saying Baal Peh, Eov, then Mishlei, you know, Baal Peh, you know, everyone knows those psukim Baal Peh. And then you start going through all the Rishonim and Halacha and Yerushalmi, and by the time they're 30, they know like Mamash Kala Tara Kula. And since then, about 8 such schools have been patterned after them, and they also exist in the land of Israel. And I know that somewhere in high school, when I realized that I know a lot of rock songs, and I know a lot of lyrics, but I still have trouble with the words of Ma'oz Tzur, and I still have trouble with Alam Michya, still can't get that Baal Peh, and now my daughter, besides at 6 years old, knows Alam Michya and all of benching, and she knows Ma'oz Tzur and Ish Stayel, and also all the Chumashim, all the Parshios, and all the Svarim of Tanakh, the Nevi'im, the Zakenim, and she also, when looking through the Mishkan book, was able to tell me which kli was missing. I didn't even know what the word kli meant until I think my year in Israel. Like, what's a kli of the Mishkan? And she knew which one was missing. And she knows that the kruvim in the picture that's like this is incorrect because it's like this and one like this. They know a lot. And how could you give that up? And tefillah. And we go to the kotel, it's in our backyard. And we go to the kotel, and they daven. Last week, my daughters gave me petex, Abba, when you go to the kotel next week, please put these in. We have special tefillot we want to say. I had to read what my daughters had to write. And indeed, they were mamish, the most beautiful tefillot. Tefillah is natural to them. Baruch Hashem is natural to them. Torah, tefillah. My daughter went for an IQ test, right? It wasn't for IQ purposes, it was for speech, because she has a slight slur with the S's. Gevaldik. So they test her, and they ask her, you know, like, what's the difference between this and this? And she did very, very badly, very, very badly. So they set her, signed her up for, like, lots of classes with, like, speech therapy or something. Turns out, so afterwards, we got the records. Right? What is it that she didn't know? Like motorcycle, newspaper, you know, things like that. I was like, well, she does have a language barrier, it's true. That we're still working on, you know. But the reason she doesn't know those words, because those words, like, they never come up. Like, she didn't know televisia. We don't own a televisia. She doesn't have a clue what that is. I don't know. I said to her, why don't you ask her questions like, on the Parsha, describe Shabbos, describe Yontif. I don't know, talk to her about things that we talk about. And Rabosai, if I ask everyone to name 10 Gedolim that are living today, or if I ask you to name 10 baseball players or 10 basketball players, which one would come easier to you? I think we know the answers. That's Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, it's alive. It's alive. You could have a living Yiddishkeit in America. It shouldn't be depressing if you have a living Yiddishkeit in America. But here's where it's alive. It's alive here. You feel it. What's going on in yeshiva is going around all over the place. You have people, tons and tons of people, learning. They fill up the Batei Medrash learning. They work. There are people that work like very, very difficult. They have long hours, 6 days a week, there's no Sunday, and yet somehow they find time to learn. It's mamish unbelievable. Men, they have other things that they could do. There was a man that was once talking about Atchalta de Gula, the beginning of redemption. And he was talking about this to a friend of his right behind Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kohen Cook's back. Rav Tzvi Yehuda was standing here, and the two men were standing over here talking. And he turns around and asks the man, "Who told you that name, Atchaltad Gula? Where did you get that from?" And the man is shocked. He's like shaking. I can't believe it. Rav Cook is yelling at him. He's like, I got it from your father, Rav Avram Yitzchak Kohen Cook. He said, "I got it from my father." By the way, the term Atchaltad Gula, Rav Cook didn't make up. It's in the Gemara. It's a halachic term. It's important to know that. So he said, My father coined that phrase for his generation. But my father saw nothing. Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook died in the 30s. He didn't see the establishment of the State of Israel. The famous Rav Cook, he never saw 48. He didn't see 67. My father didn't. If it was a Tchaltad Gula then, we are waist high in a Gula now. It is not a Tchaltad, the beginning of redemption. We're up to our waists in redemption. And Rabosai, taking that analogy one step further, Rav Tzvi Yehuda left this world without 1 million Russians making Aliyah, without 1 million Ethiopians making Aliyah, that the tremendous effect of 67 having its impact upon the religious upswing. More yeshivot and Torah learning than ever before in Jewish history. Ever before in Jewish history. For the first time since the first Beis HaMikdash, in about 10 years from now, based on just the regular statistics of Aliyah and unfortunately intermarriage, in about 10 years from now, the majority of the Jewish people will certainly be living in Israel for the first time since the first Beis HaMikdash. So when asked, why did you make Aliyah? Rabosai, it's about joining Am Yisrael, and there's only one question. I love my parents dearly. My wife is very close with her parents. Very close. And it's not those people that have a bad relationship with their parents, they could go make Aliyah. It's not pshat. But I'll tell you what pshat is. That it's either you leave or they leave. They, meaning your children, will leave you. Because Am Yisrael is going to be here. The majority of the Jewish people, Am Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, the life of Am Yisrael is going on here. And you choose. You want your kids to leave you, or you want to be here. Maybe you coming, you'll be able to bring your family with you. I had no idea that was going to happen. My sister made Aliyah 2-3 years after we did, and now my parents are making Aliyah. It works. It's not the first that that's happened. Rafas made Aliyah, brought the whole world with him. It works. Every single person is a world. Rabosai, there's a community for everyone. If Ramat Beit Shemesh, you look around and say, that's not my community, I could show you 500 communities. There are plenty of communities in Eretz Yisrael. And the more people that come, start your own community. If you want to know how to do that, you could talk to me when you're ready to do that. I was that close to starting my own community. It's not difficult. But Eretz Yisrael, this is the natural place for every Jew. The Jews have to come home. I worked for an organization called Lights in Action. Lights in Action, at that point, when I was in YU, was the only publication that was distributed across all university campuses and went into the mailbox of 50,000 Jews across the United States. And they had some provocative literature there, all to get people to think about their Judaism. And they had one mailing where big titles, "Jew, go home." From Jew to Jew, a message from your local friendly Jew. I'm not a fan, again, as I said before, I shouldn't say that. It's not that I'm not a fan. I can't push it to make Aliyah right away. That's only for a few. I like the idea of going back. You go back, you do your college, and then come back. Maybe you get married there, come back. But the longer you wait, more kids, this, I'm coming. It's not in the plans, it's not in the books, it's not in my mind. It's in my mind. There are communities in America filled with people that love Tzionut, love the idea of Aliyah. They will never make Aliyah. It's important to understand. I'm not going to belabor the point in every sikha. This was my one sikha where I give the pitch to have everyone start thinking about Eretz Yisrael. And if you need a little bit of help to understand the value and importance and beauty of Eretz Yisrael, I highly, highly recommend some Sfarim. Most closest to my heart is Eima Banim Smecha. It's in English as well. Did a great job. And Rabose, please really think it through. How do you say it?